I wrote things down for the sake of time. I realize, and you can look around and know that it's going to be a pretty full evening. But this I say with love and consideration to all our city council members and our city officials and staff. We are in a really tough and crucial time in our lives in this community, and I want us to really think about the words as they are written in the scripture. And we are called as people of responsibility, people that make decisions in our community. And in 1 Corinthians, it says, be on your guard. It's telling us, each one individually, be on our guard. Stand firm. Stand in the faith. Be men and women of courage. It says, be strong. And do everything. It ends there by saying, do everything in love. And, you know, as we go through this evening, I'd like us all to think about who our higher power, who our Lord, who our Savior, who our Creator is, and who our Director is. And tonight, hopefully, we can come to an agreement, whether it's an agreement to disagree. I encourage and I challenge all of us to think about who is directing us and how it affects each other, how it will affect our community, and how it will affect the future of this community. We're all seeking God's direction. It says in Ephesians 5, 15 through 17, said, be very careful then. Be very careful how you live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity, because the days are evil. And as we know, there is evil all around us. But yet again, there's also some great joy and excitement and positiveness all around us. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the Lord wills for us. I know there's been some heavy times in our community. This is the time to talk about unity. Some of you may be thinking, well, get this guy off of here. We need to talk about business. This is part of our business, folks, is being in unity. And I've grown to know that God will bring that in our lives if we seek that. It says, as a prisoner for the Lord, then I urge you to have a life worthy of the calling you have received. This is for all of us. Be completely humble and gentle. Be patient, bearing one another in love. Make every effort to keep unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. There is one body and one Spirit. There's only one Reedley, folks. Just as you were called to the one hope when you were called, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is over all and through all and in all. Bow your heads with me, let's pray. Father God, we thank you for these times in which you continue to be with us. Direct and guide each breath, each word, each thought, and allow us to sense your presence, your peace, your direction. Allow us to sense the guidance of your arms embracing each one of us, Lord, helping us to understand, helping us to know that you are our director, you are our guide, you are the reason as to why we exist. So, Lord, direct each one tonight and allow us to know that we come to come in unity and harmony and seek for one purpose, and that is to make the right decision, and a decision that we can all live with. And Father, we hold our city council folks in your hands, that you will guide and direct them. Be with them, Father, protect and provide for them every thought, every word that proceeds from their mouth. Let it be a thought that comes from you first. And we thank you, Lord, for the privilege and the opportunity to call you Father, to call you Lord and Savior, to call you to be present with us this evening. And we thank you in Jesus' name. We all say amen.
Join the city council with flag salute, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Hello.
Can you turn the mic system up?
Hello. Can you hear me? Hello. Hello. That's is that louder?
Can you hear back there? Can you hear in the back?
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem Steve Rapata has an announcement that he would like to make at this time.
You know, I know it's come to light about my residency, and just to let everyone know that this has been an ongoing process. It's not something that's new and breaking. And we have worked with the Attorney General's office and the Secretary of State to get a final determination about this issue. And just to give you a little bit of background, based on how the community of Reedley electorate goes, there are 5 geographical boundaries in this city for the city council. But every registered voter in the city of Reedley has the opportunity to vote for every single council member. So in the eyes of the county, we have one voting district, but we have 5 geographical district council seats. Apparently a complaint was made. The county clerk or county registrar and elections office sent it back to our city clerk, notifying them to do something with it. Previous to that, though, we had been working on this because the only thing that can be deemed as something illegal or fraudulent or criminal is when you pull your papers and ask the voters to have the faith in you to vote for you, that you don't actually live in the district that you put down on that piece of paper. When I did that for re-election in 2008, I did live in my district. Had lived in that same neighborhood since 1967. You know, Steve Rapata's life changed. He went from a single man for 49 years to marrying a beautiful young lady and basically gained a family. And we all have been through tough economic times, and we know that family is very important to us. And when my family needed me to help them to have a place to live, and it became not just myself and my wife, but then our daughter and our son-in-law and our granddaughter, a 2-bedroom, 3-quarter bath house wasn't gonna cut it. Some people probably saw us driving around in the neighborhood in our district wondering if we were stalkers at times, because for a year my wife and I perused the whole district trying to find a home to buy. I have the smallest geographical district in the city of Reedley that has the largest retail base in it. Therefore, the inventory of homes in my district is very small. During that time, there were really only 3 or 4 homes for sale in my geographical district, of which 3 of those were 2-bedroom homes, which were exactly what we already had. One was a 4-bedroom, 2-bath home, which we made an offer on Stephen Avenue, which was in the district. We were outbid by an investor who now uses that home as a rental home. But we still had the issue of we had to have space for our family. We were then given the opportunity to purchase a home outside of the district, and that was always of the greatest concern to me, which I brought forth to the city manager and other officials. And, you know, we worked on the statutes, and statutes are like a rule book. And, you know, Mr. Chavez and Mr. Salino know me in the sports world, and we've always worked hard on those rule books. And rule books are based on interpretation. And I've won a lot of arguments with umpires, and I've lost a lot of arguments with umpires over how a rule is interpreted. And as you look through the statutes, you can interpret things both ways because of how our electorate is, because we let everyone vote upon us. In the county's eyes, I live in the voting district because I never left the city limits. In the state's eyes, some people interpret it that because I met the obligation of living in the district at the time I pulled my papers and went through the election, I met my obligation and I still live in the city limits, and therefore I should be able to fill my term. Of course, through this whole process, I was hoping that that's how this would end up. When we bought the home outside the district, then of course we continued to stay in the smaller home because I wanted to do the right thing. But economically, it became feasible to continue that. Today, I met with the city attorney and with interim city manager at the city attorney's office in Fresno, and we were given the attorney general's final opinion on the statutes. And let me say that, you know, the complaint that was filed with the county, I appreciate the fact that those young men looking out for the community, and I wish that their complaint was valid, because in their complaint, the statutes that they used would have meant that I could stay in my seat, because the statutes they used said that as long as when I moved, I did not move outside the city limits, I was fine. So I would forewarn anyone who's going to utilize the statutes to read them fully. But again, this is not something that was being hidden. It was not something that I meant any malice. My interpretation of what I believed the statute stated, based on information I gained from the Secretary of State's office, the AG's office, and the county offices, I believed I was within my rights to hold my seat. Today was the final determination that we've been waiting for. And that final determination states by the Attorney General's office that the Attorney General has opined on that continued residence in the area from which an official is elected is required to carry out the term of office. Based on the foregoing, the law provides that a councilman's seat becomes vacant when he moves his residence outside of the district for which he was elected, although within the city. So they have deemed that the district is not one voting district, as the county has. They have deemed that the district is the geographical district that's drawn on the map. And I've been waiting for this decision, and I would abide by it. And I've always said that from the beginning when I presented this to people, that I would abide by the final decision. And therefore, tonight, with a heavy heart, you know, I want to thank the people who elected me twice to sit in this chair, because they put their faith in me. And it was first time 78.6% of the voters, and the second time 92.4%. And I have no regrets on anything I've done while I've sat in this seat. And I have no regrets on anything that I have done in representing this community at meetings, at the Capitol, and in Washington, or wherever I've been. And I'm always proud to tell people that I'm from Reedley, that I represent Reedley. And whether I'm a councilman or not, in my heart, I will always represent Reedley. Always have. To the best of my ability. These people that sit up here have a very tough job. And we don't always agree, but I think we've all each gained each other's respect. And I ask the four of them to go forward. You have business to deal with, and I'm asking you just to stay strong and stay with the plan and balance the budget for this community and its citizens. And I know you have a task in front of you to find someone to replace me in this seat. I ask that you do so with someone that will give it the dedication that all of you do. With that, I would like to present to Mayor Mary Fast my official letter of resignation. And lastly, I would just like to say that it has been my honor to serve this community. And I won't stop serving this community. You know, those of you that know me and have known me for a long time, you know my very good friend Sal Gonzalez. And last night at football practice, he told me, "Coach, all you're doing is coming home because you get to come coach football full time again." Because we did work around my schedule on the football field to be here for meetings and go out of town for meetings. But, you know, if I get the opportunity again, I will always love to serve this community. And I hold no grudges with anybody. And I have nothing in my heart of disdain for any one person. As Pastor Frank spoke tonight, things happen for a reason, and the good Lord oversees us all. And we can agree to disagree, and the best thing you do after you're done disagreeing in this building, each and every meeting, is walk out that door and remember that you're all the community of Reedley, and you're all one, and you all need to work together. With that, I thank you all very, very much for your time.
Steve, I'd like to say thank you for your service. We haven't always agreed, you're right, but we've sometimes agreed to disagree, and we've always worked together, and I've appreciated you being next to me and working alongside me in a lot of different ways. And thank you. Just wanted to say thank you, and you're not going to be left. We will include you still. Clerk, may we have the roll call, please?
Councilmember Chavez.
Here.
Celino.
Here.
Betancourt.
Here.
Mayor Fast.
Here. We have a presentation this evening from the police department, a Walk Your Child to School Day.
Yes, ma'am. Good evening, Mayor, council members. This evening, I am extending an invitation to join members of the Reedley Police Department and Kings County Unified School District on August 17th, 2011, for the 15th annual Walk Your Child to School Day. In a little bit, I will be providing you with an invitation, an official invitation. In the spirit of school starting, it'll be something that you can put up on your refrigerator to remind you to come join us on that day. This event began as a way to reach out to the driving community to remind them that school is back in session and to be aware of children crossing the street. Once school begins, there are hundreds of children walking to school or being driven to school by their parents. Unfortunately, there are those who still fail to slow down and the unthinkable happens. Each year, we investigate traffic accidents that involve children that are walking to school. Fortunately, all that happens is they receive a few bumps. Nationwide, the pedestrian accidents fatality rate among children ages 14 and under has fallen about 40% in recent years. The injury rate for the same group has also declined by about 29%. While this is good news, it does not mean that there is still not a reason for concern or that pedestrian accidents involving children are still not an all too frequent occurrence. Most children do not really walk to school anymore. You have probably noticed that school buses stop after very short distances to pick up more school children. The number of children who walk to school nationally has dropped by an amazing 42%. The lack of walking has resulted in a decline in pedestrian accidents involving school children and an increase in cases of childhood obesity. As Michelle Obama and others have targeted childhood obesity as an issue, it is reasonable to conclude that additional measures may be important to protect our children, including creating safe areas for them to walk. More and more effort is being put into educating children about pedestrian safety, decreasing speed limits in areas where children, creating more designated crosswalks, building pedestrian walkways, and providing crossing guards when needed. Even though the death rate among children under the age of 14 due to pedestrian accidents has declined, pedestrian injuries remains the second leading cause of unintentional injury-related death among children in this age group. Studies and statistical data show that about 19% of all accident-related fatalities of children under the age of 16 involve pedestrian-related traffic accidents. There is a combination of factors that contribute to the high risk of pedestrian accidents involving children. A national survey shows that 2/3 of drivers passing through a school zone exceed the posted speed limit 30 minutes prior to the start of school and 30 minutes after school is out. Children are also more susceptible to these types of accidents because they have a difficulty judging the speed of oncoming cars, spatial relationships, and distance. Kids do not fully develop these types of skills until they are about 10 years old. The ability to process information in situations in which cars and their dangers are present is literally beyond a child's sensory and cognitive abilities. A study conducted in London actually revealed that children in this age group between the ages of 5 and 14 cannot accurately judge the speed of cars traveling faster than 20 miles per hour. Children who do risky things like running across the street when a car is coming may do so not because they are inattentive, but because they are unable to make a clear appreciate or judge the risk. Again, in a moment, too, you will be receiving tips for teaching kids pedestrian safety to please pass on to your grandkids, your kids. We will have some available for the public so that they can take home. But young children are impulsive and often act without understanding the consequences of their actions. This means that they do things like dart out in front of oncoming cars and run out from behind parked cars. They also have an increased risk of being distracted by other things when they should be alert for traffic dangers. If parents focus on informing their children and model safe pedestrian behavior, parents can reduce the risk of their children being involved in a serious pedestrian accident. Parents also need to understand children's limits and monitor them until they are old enough to fully perceive and appreciate the risk. Here are just some tips. Always use safe pedestrian behavior yourself. Act as a role model for your child. That's something that a lot of parents don't do. They do not use the crosswalks themselves. Teach young children about pedestrian rules and behaviors. Teach them to play away from the road. Always supervise children under the age of 10 when they are crossing the street. Teach children to properly cross a safe distance in front of a school bus. Walk on sidewalks when available. Teach them how to cross the street or at a crosswalk or corner. Teach your child to stop at the edge of parked car curbs or other vehicles and look both ways. Teach children to look at car lights and listen for engines. Teach them to always be on alert. We'll be meeting at the police department at 7 o'clock on the 17th for briefing and deploying to our locations by 7:15. We hope to see you there. Thank you.
Public comment provides an opportunity for members of the public to address the City Council on items of interest to the public within the Council's jurisdiction and which are not already on the agenda this evening. It is the policy of the Council not to answer questions impromptu. Concerns or complaints will be referred to the City Manager's office. Speakers should limit their comments to not more than 3 minutes. No more than 10 minutes per issue will be allowed. For items which are on the agenda this evening, members of the public will be provided an opportunity to address the Council as each item is brought up for discussion. Is there any public comment this evening? Seeing none, we'll move on. The consent agenda. Items are considered routine in nature and voted upon as one item. Under a consent agenda category, a recommended course of action for each item is made. Any council member may remove any item from the consent agenda in order to discuss and or change the recommended course of action, and the council can approve the remainder of the consent agenda. A council member's vote in favor of the consent agenda is considered and recorded as a separate affirmative vote in favor of each action listed. Motions in favor of the consent agenda are deemed to include a motion to waive the full reading of any ordinance on the consent agenda. For adoption of ordinances, only those that have received a unanimous vote upon introduction are considered consent items. Would anyone like to move an item from the consent agenda?
I have none.
Any member from the public?
I'll make a motion to approve the consent
agenda. Is there a second?
Second.
Call for the question.
Councilmember Chavez?
Yes.
Cellino?
Yes.
Betancourt?
Yes.
Mayor Fast?
Yes. New business, item 9. The Frankwood Avenue Rural 20A Utility Undergrounding District Update.
I thought I wasn't going to get in. Good evening, Mayor and Council members.
Good evening.
As you can tell from the staff report that I put together, it's pretty elaborate and long. But I'm going to go ahead and summarize considerably so we can get to any questions that you may have. This item, just to give you an update, a brief background, staff is currently completing the bid and contract documents for our Frankwood Avenue project, which is currently scheduled for construction in mid-2012. This street improvement was originally envisioned to include the undergrounding of overhead utilities within the project limit through PG&E's Rule 28 program. However, there is no funding from the utilities undergrounding program to proceed with the undergrounding of these utilities at this time. Staff coordinated with PG&E for several months on how best to resolve the scheduling conflict between the construction for this street improvement project and the most adequate implementation timeline for the undergrounding for this undergrounding district, which was formed back in 2008. The city's current and only option for undergrounding the overhead utilities within this project limit and concurrent with the street improvement projects is only if the city funds the project cost from other revenue sources other than the Rule 28 program, which I mentioned earlier. Now, the cost to underground this project are currently estimated at $2.5 million, of which $400,000 we would get back as PG&E credits. Consideration of the current status of this underground district and the fact that the street project is using federal funds with deadlines that must be met, staff request that council accept this underground utility district update and authorize staff to postpone the implementation of this district to a future year so we may proceed with completing the street improvements immediately, which I mentioned it's scheduled right now for early to mid next year, 2012. Should be noted that the postponement of said undergrounding work to a future date may result in considerable disturbance to the street improvements, and at this point we're anticipating that it could happen between the next 7 to 10 years. However, in the meantime, staff will coordinate on securing funding from Fresno County to complete the undergrounding work at that time. Now, if successful, staff will bring back to council this undergrounding project, and we will update the implementation date based on an updated project schedule. With that, I'm going to answer any questions you may have or anything that you would like to discuss that I did not cover from the report.
So from PG&E and county, you're talking about constraints of time plus funding.
Yes.
So we have to put this aside.
Yes.
So we'll do the work, and then in the future, we'll come back and tear up the street again.
Unfortunately.
Right. And this is the one thing that bothers me, is that when we've done this in the past, when they come back and tear up the street, what is replaced is not level and put to where it should be. And this is where the citizens complain. They see the beautiful street, then it's tore up. So what I would like to see is to make sure that when they come back and tear up the street, that it's done properly.
Yes, and we're going to go ahead and try and coordinate it with our...
Band-aid.
We're going to go ahead and try and coordinate this improvements with our slurry seal for this new street so we can eliminate those patches. And, yes, we'll make sure we built the street back to as it should be.
Okay. Thank you.
Now, when we get the funding in the next 10 or 12 years, is that going to cover redoing the improvements plus the UUD?
Yeah, it would do that. Just like we did with the roundabout project. I don't know if you guys noticed when we finished the roundabout, PG&E came afterwards and removed their poles, and in the process had to disrupt some of the sidewalk and some road improvement, which I remember Councilman Soleno bringing up at one point. But all of that has been restored back to acceptable condition, so okay. It would be the same process.
Any other council person have a question? Is there any public comment on this issue? See none. This is just an information item. We don't need to vote on it.
Well, actually, I would like to get an action, direction, an action for direction.
Okay. So the direction is to not do the undergrounding at this time, but to go ahead and go forward with the street and road construction.
Yes.
Okay.
Is that a resolution or just a motion?
Just a motion.
Okay, I'll make that motion too.
I'll second.
All for the question.
Councilmember Chavez.
Yes.
Betancourt?
Yes.
Cellino?
Yes.
Mayor Fast?
Yes. Item 10, request for closure of the block wall at Carpenter Avenue and Frankwood Avenue. David?
Mayor Fast, I need to remove myself because
the Okay. Okay. Thank you, Councilwoman Betancourt. If you would wait just a minute, please. Thank you, Mr. Berletic.
Good evening, Mayor Fast, members of the council. Before you is a request from the residents of West Carpenter Avenue. They've provided several letters and signed petition from the neighborhood requesting that the block wall that divides their subdivision from Frankwood Avenue currently has an opening in the block wall providing pedestrian connectivity. Their request is that it be closed. They're requesting that, as stated in their letters, due to their concerns over neighborhood safety in a recent shooting. The existing block wall was part of the subdivision design, and it was intended that it provide pedestrian connectivity between neighborhoods. Pedestrian connectivity and neighborhood connectivity is a fundamental smart growth principle intended to build a stronger community. The pedestrian connectivity standards we have are contained in our long-range planning documents, both the Ridley specific plan and the general plan. There are pros and cons to connected neighborhoods, to block walls, to cul-de-sacs, but what is before you today is a request from the neighborhood due to recent events. I do have some pictures for you that can be handed out showing the existing cul-de-sac. No, they don't. They're right there. Don't mind handing those out. showing the existing open wall at the end of the cul-de-sac. It's shown from both sides. There are also two exhibits showing a similar type opening in a block wall in a subdivision across Frankwood Avenue. And one of the exhibits from Hawthorne Heights at Cambridge Avenue shows you what was done from a similar request. We had a 40-foot opening in a block wall at the end of a cul-de-sac. The neighborhood thought it was excessive. They asked that it be closed, and we compromised and built a half wall and closed off half of the opening, still maintaining the pedestrian connectivity, but providing a little more privacy. The request from the neighborhood is very clear. They'd like to see it closed. We provided you with several options and estimated costs for the options in your staff report. And they run from leaving it as is, which obviously is no cost, to completely enclosing the wall with similar block wall. The option five that we provide in your staff report is a bit of an alternative whereby you could build a block wall, not enclosing the opening, but staggering it parallel to the wall, which would give you solid screening from Frankwood Avenue into the neighborhood, but also maintain the pedestrian connectivity. And what we're asking you tonight is to give us direction if you would like us to pursue an alternative to the opening that exists today, and if so, how you would like that to be funded. I'm available for questions, and I believe some of the neighbors are in attendance tonight.
Dave, could I ask you a question? September 30th, 2010, they submitted a letter, and it was a petition. We have the paper here, and there was no response from the city. Do you remember that, or were you in?
I did not receive that letter and that petition until last week. I believe it was submitted to other city staff in September, but I do not recall seeing that myself. We provided it for you in the staff report once it was received in the planning department.
Okay. Well, you know, I had a chance to go and view what you're talking about and their concerns, and I think that, as far as I'm concerned, I don't know about the rest of the council, but I think that wall should be closed, because if we just put a wrought iron fence, it's not going to do any good. But if you have this many people that are concerned about their neighborhood, I think we should abide by the request.
So. I understand. Not to be insensitive to the request, I don't think this is the time I would want to debate the positive aspect of keeping it open. But there are issues related to pedestrian connectivity, public safety, police having access to the neighborhood, and the fire department having access to the neighborhood. Rather than try to convince the neighbors or the council one way or the other, I'd like to let them share with you their request.
Any other comments from the council? Okay.
I hear the public safety issues by the police department.
Good evening, council. A couple of concerns with the complete closure of the wall. It's a long cul-de-sac. It's about 600 feet long from the nearest connecting street. Basically, there's only one way into the neighborhood. From a public safety standpoint, providing emergency fire services, we probably would be at a disadvantage if the wall were closed completely. There is a hydrant at the very end of the cul-de-sac that would be used to serve the several three or four or five homes that are right around the cul-de-sac area. And what I'm saying is that our fire trucks are really big, and we go down this 600-foot long street to the end of the street and start parking our fire trucks, and we may not get everything where exactly we need it. And what that opening allows us is to park along Frankwood Avenue and bring more personnel and equipment to the scene. The houses in the area, I think, are multi-level, meaning they're two-story houses. And there may be a necessity to put up a ladder truck on Frankwood Avenue in order to get over the block wall that's there already to help suppress fire. So from a public safety standpoint, I have some concerns. I know they're concerned about their neighborhood safety. I don't disagree with them. It's just that in an emergency situation, time is of the essence.
Thank you, Chief. Yep.
Good evening. From the police department perspective, it's all it is a tactical advantage for us. We could approach the area from the east side or from Frankwood to approach in that area. an advantage of closing it off would be that it's only one way in, one way out. And that could increase the chances of us stopping or contacting anyone that is causing any problems in that area. So other than that, that's the only issue that we have, is just from a tactical perspective.
Thank you, Chief. Is there anyone from the public that would like to speak on this issue? Would you please try to limit your comments to about 3 minutes?
Okay, I'll try.
Thank you, because I'm sure there's probably more than one person.
Yes. I just would like to begin by apologizing. I would like to thank the council for the opportunity to tell our story and hear our concern as the neighbor of West Carpenter Street. Many of my neighbors are here tonight, and I would like to thank them for all the love and support they have shown our family through this horrific experience. They truly are a sense of community. As many of you know, last Sunday at approximately 11:45 at night, gunshots were directed towards my home. I quickly woke my husband, who discovered that a bullet had been shot through our front window. The bullet went through the window, through our curtain, through a chalkboard, and then lodged itself in the wall of my children's playroom. On the opposite side of that same wall, my two children, ages 2 and 3, lay innocently sleeping. Since I heard several gunshots, yet we could only find one bullet, I had the unforgettable fear of not knowing where the other bullets had hit. I immediately went into my children's room and had to physically check them front and back for gunshot wounds. It was an experience that I will never forget. It was and still is surreal. The next morning, we discovered the additional bullets that had hit the exterior of our home. We thank God every day that our family was not physically injured from this horrific event. It is unimaginable to think what could have been. Although we are not physically injured, we continue to feel unsafe and vulnerable in our own home. Since their rooms are at the front of the house, we no longer feel safe allowing our children to sleep in their own beds. We cannot allow them to play in the playroom at night for fear of what may happen. We have to do whatever it takes to protect our family. Unfortunately, there is only so much that we can do, and the most critical step to protecting our family is in your hands. The police officers say that the shots came from the direction of where the wall is open onto Frankwood. We believe the gunmen approached our home from Frankwood, entered our neighborhood through the wall opening. They directed several shots towards our home and then quickly escaped down Frankwood, where the city ends and the dark country section of the street begins. Crime in our neighborhood is not a new experience for most of us. As you may recall, a tragic and horrific stabbing occurred on a neighbor's front porch just one street up on Huntsman. Many of us who live in the cul-de-sac have been victim to multiple crimes. We have had our vehicles broken into on 3 occasions. A neighbor across from us has been vandalized 5 times. There's been eggings, graffiti, bullying of our children, and now it's come to gunshots being fired into our home. It is clear that we have become an easy target to criminal activity. We strongly believe it is because of the opening in the cement wall that provides a quick and convenient access for criminals who then speed off into the dark because it goes right out into the country. We have been informed that the wall opening serves to promote neighborhood connectivity, which is part of the long-range specific plan and general plan. Unfortunately, it is not promoting neighborhood connectivity. Rather, it is promoting criminal activity and harm against our families. I do have some photographs, but you have some already, so I won't distribute mine. But as you can see, this section of Frankwood is not an appropriate or safe pedestrian walkway. It goes right in, and it's a very busy, and there's a lot of heavy traffic right there on Frankwood. There are often large semis and whatnot speeding down Frankwood as they exit out of town. It is not a safe place to take our children walking or riding their bikes. There is no crosswalk connecting our side of the street with the neighborhood across the way, so there really is not a connectivity option. By having the opening, it has encouraged people to cross into a very dangerous part of the road. But more than that, the reality is that the world and our community is changing. Although encouraging pedestrian connectivity is a wonderful concept, in today's world, it's not always realistic. Who cares about neighborhood connectivity if we can't even let our children outside to play? The opening in the wall is not encouraging neighborhood connectivity. It is actually destroying our neighborhood. I remember a time when we didn't even have to lock our homes, yet today we have learned that this is no longer the case. Times have changed, and so must we, and so should the priorities of the city. We must be smart, proactive, and band together to keep our families safe. My family has chosen to take all of the fear and anger over this incident to make a change. We could choose to live in fear or even move, for that matter, but instead we are trying to be proactive and do whatever is necessary to keep our families safe and our neighborhood a peaceful place to be. For this, we need your help. Although I realize that financial burdens on the city are of concern, we cannot put a price on the lives of our children. Over everything else, we must make the safety and security of not just our neighborhood, but our entire community a priority. I recognize that other options have been provided as a solution. Given the severity of the recent situation and the continued increase of crime on our block, I hope you realize that the only option should be the use of brick to close the wall. A fence or gate would be a waste of money, as our neighborhood would still be vulnerable to these criminals. The only solution in our eyes is the complete closure of the wall using the existing concrete blocks. Please unite with us, the residents of Carpenter Street, as we rise up against these senseless acts of violence and renew our sense of safety and security.
Thank you. Thank you. Would anyone else like to speak on this issue?
I'd just like to support.
Would you please state your name?
Richard Molinar. Richard Molinar, 462 West Carpenter.
Thank you.
I just want to support the person that just spoke. The crime has increased on Carpenter Avenue. Connectivity is a nice, warm, fuzzy feeling, but as was already stated, it's not working. There's not a crosswalk. There's no connectivity with the other neighborhood. We've got great connectivity on Carpenter and the other streets surrounding Carpenter, but crossing Frankwood is not a viable option for connectivity, and as was stated by the police department, would actually enhance the ability to catch the criminals that if they were locked in that cul-de-sac. So I support what was mentioned, and I think a lot of other people here are from Carpenter Avenue and support as well.
Thank you for your comment. Is there anyone else that would like to speak on this issue?
Hello, my name is George Nord, 1361 South Riverview. I do represent my daughter and son-in-law and granddaughter who live on Carpenter, and my very pregnant daughter who's going to bring twins to us any day now. So they're going to live there, and I would appreciate you voting positively in this in relation to closing the wall completely. We did talk about alternatives of the setback wall and all those kind of things, but really, as Mr. Zeleno brought up before, this issue was brought to the city, I think, approximately a year ago when there began to be traffic through of folks who really did not belong in the community and were harassing people. And so it is not a new one. It's not related just to this incident. This is just kind of the exclamation point that caused, I think, many of these folks to be here tonight. And I might ask how many are from that area and would agree with closing that wall completely. It's nice to see people raise their hands. Some are outside, too, so... thank you for your time.
Thank you, George. Any other public comment? Would you please come to the microphone? And state your name and address for our record.
Paul Rodriguez, 114 West Carpenter. I live right across the street from Mariah. Just two things. Tactical for police department. We've always had a great response. I've been present on a few of those criminal activities, and the response from the police department has been excellent. I've seen about fire trucks. I've seen fire trucks come down that road with no problem. It's actually a pretty wide road. The cul-de-sac, the circle's wide. I've seen fire trucks come in there, circle around, and leave. And if they do close the wall and they do have to put a ladder on the other side, I know quite a few of those guys, and they train really good, and I don't see they're going to have a problem coming over that wall. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Anyone else that would like to speak on this issue?
I forgot to mention, there is another fire hydrant on the corner of Carpenter and, is that Sirier?
Yes.
Yeah, there is another hydrant there. So there's one at each end,
of
that
cul-de-sac.
Street. Yeah.
Okay.
And I do have a letter from a neighbor that wasn't able to attend. She wanted me to distribute that.
Hey, I'd like to bring David Berletic back. He made a comment about how we would pay for this, so I'd like to ask him what our options are in paying for this.
He's coming.
David?
Yes.
We're asking the question is what options do we have with the ability to pay for whatever construction we might be interested in doing?
Where's Lori? You would be looking probably to the general fund. I don't know that we have any other resources to address something like that, unless Lori can get creative. It is within the landscaping lighting maintenance district, but there are no funds in there, I would assume. Russ available? We don't have.
What did I miss?
We're looking at the possibility of doing some fencing work on Carpenter Street, and was wondering where we might look to get some funding to do a project.
Funding is very difficult right now. I know that the estimate was $6,500 around in that area. We do have some very able crews that can do block, so it would be a matter of materials. It would still tax us, to be honest with you. It's possible, but it would tax us in other areas.
You know, we've gone through the budget and we have found revenue for different agencies that come before us, and I think we can do this project here to the full cost. I don't see that we have to struggle over $6,500. It's almost like a stop sign. When a neighborhood asks for a stop sign because there's danger of speeding, we tell them no because we can't do it for some reason. Now, if we're going to tell these people there's some reason that we can't do this, it's not acceptable. If we can give other agencies thousands of dollars, we're only looking for $6,500 for this one.
I'm wondering if instead of the block wall, if we could maybe do like a chain link fence with a gate, and possibly lock the gate. And my concern is the access for in case of a fire, because you have that fire hydrant right there by that end of the street.
If you want to keep it as a possibility, Lori just informed me that our LTF monies did come in higher this year than we've previously anticipated. So we do have a little bit more monies in our materials account than we originally thought we would have in the budget. We estimated low. We usually get lower than what we estimate low, but this year, miraculously, we have a little bit more. So it's possible with the materials money if you so choose to do so.
Mm-hmm. Reluctant to speak for public safety, but they, more often than not, when we're reviewing projects, they're reluctant to see locked fences. They view those as obstacles that are very time consuming. They may have a different opinion they'd like to share. Locked gates.
Well, unfortunately, if you lock the gate, then of course everyone has to now carry an extra key, but that obviously the gate is not going to prevent a bullet from traveling. If that is in case what did happen, if the bullet was fired from the Frankwood side, obviously a gate's not going to stop it. So we're kind of in the same predicament for the community or for that neighborhood.
Okay. For a motion?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and make a motion to go with number four, which is to install the concrete block wall. And I'm going to ask that we fund it through the LTF fund. If we can.
Second.
Call for the question.
Councilmember Chavez.
Yes.
Celino.
Yes.
Mayor Fast.
Yes. I do need to share with you that I had a similar incident in my family, with very similar to what happened at your home, and I can identify with you very easily. So thank you for bringing this to our attention, and we'll try to get our staff out there as soon as we can.
Thank you so much on behalf of all of us.
You're welcome. Okay, would you ask Councilwoman Betancourt to come back
in? We're trying to locate her.
Okay.
Lost in the crowd.
She's in your kitchenette.
You know, while you're looking, I think, while you're looking for Anita Betancourt, I just want to make a little statement about Steve Rapata. He's served this community so well. He is a huge loss. He is a huge loss. Whether you like him or not, that man has worked his heart out for this community. And I, for one, am very sorry to see him leaving. I realize he did what he needed to do, but I hope some of you will step forward and perhaps take his place at some point. It's a tough job.
Thank you, George. Okay. Item 11 is approval of a contract for our new city manager.
Mayor Fast and members of the council, indeed a pleasure for me to make the recommendation this evening to approve the attached city manager employment agreement, identifying the terms and conditions of the appointment of Nicole Ziba as city manager. Following an extensive recruitment effort, including interviews with numerous qualified candidates, the city council has selected Nicole Ziba as city manager. The attached agreement sets forth the terms and conditions of Ms. Ziba's employment as city manager. City manager employment agreements require approval of the city council. There are sufficient funds available in the administration budget to accommodate the salary and benefit package recommended in the city manager's employment agreement, which is the same salary and benefit package the previous city manager started with in 2008. I might also tell the council that, for those of you who don't know, Ms. Ziba is here this evening with her husband, Derek. Would you stand up, please, and let people see you? Good.
Okay, we have a city contract to agree to. Are there any comments from the council or questions from the council on this issue? This is a similar contract, or the same contract with a different name as what we had for Rocky. No comments?
No.
Any comments from the public on this issue?
Would you tell us about the process you went through briefly?
I will let our city manager speak to that effect.
Well, we had actually had two different processes.
Ray. Tell them.
Oh. Okay. There was a, I usually look at the guy I'm talking to. But anyway, when I came on board as the interim city manager, they were in a process of about a five-month recruitment on a large scale to attract candidates. The council went through looking at the finalists from that recruitment, did not find someone that they felt was suitable for the position, and asked me to take the time to do a targeted recruitment, not another 6 months or 5 months. I didn't think we had that kind of time. And after a couple weeks of work and calling all the chips I know from people up and down the state of California, we came up with three very well-qualified candidates. And we were very, very fortunate to attract the three that we did, and in particular, Ms. Ziba. So with the council's review of all candidates, they made the decision that she would be the best fit here for the city of Reedley.
And we're looking forward to the next 5 years with you.
Okay, is there any public comment on this issue other than from Nicole? I'm going to give her a chance to speak in just a minute. Seeing none, I'd like to invite her up, and while she's coming up, I'd like to read the news release that our office has prepared. I'm announcing today the unanimous decision of our Reedley City Council to appoint Nicole R. Ziba as the City of Reedley's new city manager effective August 22, 2011. Ms. Ziba has 12 years of public sector experience working with local governments. She's currently the deputy city manager for the City of Fresno. Their loss, our gain. Her career highlights include serving as the Executive Director of Human Resources for Fresno Unified School District and Senior Manager for Maximus, a nationwide government consulting firm. As Deputy City Manager with the City of Fresno, Ms. Ziba was appointed by Mayor Ashley Swearingen to serve as the city's industrial specialist, expediting business expansion and relocation within the city, and was also recently appointed by the mayor to serve as a director on the Fresno County Workforce Investment Board. She is currently acts as liaison to the Fresno County Economic Development Corporation and is currently an executive board member for the Fresno Clovis Convention and Visitors Bureau. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Madam Mayor, members of council, it is truly my honor to stand before you tonight and have you vote on this contract. Ray knows that I was not in the market looking for a position. When he said Reedley, my heart jumped, and I caught the wave and I've taken it here. I currently reside in Toll House, a community even smaller than Reedley, from Fresno standards. And so I am well-versed at what smaller cities are dealing with today in terms of economic development, public safety. We in the Valley really have high need, low resource, most cities in the Valley, and it's the nature of the Valley. And so I hope that my experience in the Valley will serve really well. I look forward to working with what I've come to know as a very talented staff already. I look forward to working with each one of you. Mr. Chavez, I did not have a chance to meet with you. I look forward to getting to know you. Was very impressed in the interview with the quality and depth of questions, and truly tough interview. Tough interview. So I know this community should be very proud of the work you did in looking for a city manager, and I look forward to getting to know this community, to being involved with the community organizations, and I thank you very much.
Welcome.
Okay.
I'll make the motion to approve the contract.
Is there a second?
Second.
Call for the question.
Councilmember Chavez.
Yes.
Betancourt.
Yes.
Celino.
Yes.
Mayor Fast.
Yes. I may say she aced our interview. Okay, moving on to council reports. Requests by council members for future agenda items or reports of the council members. And I'll start with Councilman Salena.
Yes, I'd like to direct this to Mr. Martinez. Is he here? Engineer? I would like to have some information on the bridge, replacing the Manning Bridge, as to where we're at. You don't have to do it tonight, but just give us information for the council as to what the holdup is on that. That's number one. Number two, the holdup on the water towers, of what's happening with that, because we only have 18 months to put that in place, otherwise we lose the funding. And do we have the funding for the bridge at this time? This information I'd like to have for the council, if that's
okay.
All right.
Starting with the bridge,
you don't have to. I mean, you can.
Yeah.
You can.
I think this is something for our next meeting.
Yes, you can just put it in writing to us.
Oh, okay.
All the information, okay.
Okay.
These are the things that I'm requesting information from you for us for the future council.
Yes, at the last council meeting, I did mention that I was going to be putting together a workshop to give you guys all an update on all of our capital improvement projects.
Great.
And I'm hoping that I can be prepared for that by next month, September.
Okay. Okay. You know, one of my concerns was with the water tower, because that's going to be very important for the city, because those water towers are going to mean that certain parts of the city, their water pressure is going to be improving dramatically. So that's, and we only have 18 months to do it.
We are working as diligent as possible to get the water tower started. As you may know, you guys approved a construction contract agreement a few months ago, 2-3 months ago. And unfortunately, because we're dealing with the new regulations as far as the stormwater pollution prevention from the state, we're working right now and putting all of that in place so we can go out and break ground. As of last week, or as of this Monday, I'm sorry, last Friday, because we're having weekly meetings on this project with the contractor. And last Friday, we thought we were going to be able to break ground on the 18th of this month, which is next week or a couple of weeks from now. But now we're moving that target a little bit further, about a week further. So we'll definitely break ground by the end of this month. And as far as our deadline, I've been coordinating with the EDA funding agency as far as what our schedule is, and we're gonna do our best to meet it. But I don't think we'll lose the funding if we show great progress by that time, which I think we should be just about down. Our schedule right now, the contractor schedule, has that tower to be finished in November, and our deadline is October. So we are, in order to be able to meet that deadline, we're putting together a very elaborate project schedule that, mm-hmm. where we're going to be tracking pretty much the project on a week-to-week basis, so we can make sure that if there's opportunities to advance some of the construction activities, we'll be looking into that. And but like I said, we should be okay as far as schedule.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have two more, and this is directed to our finance director and our public works director. Councilman Potter is not longer with us anymore, but he had requested numbers on privatizing of garbage disposal. And since he's not here, I'm requesting those numbers that he requested, if that's possible.
That is possible. We probably won't be able to move forward with that due to some other deadlines until September, the first part of September. We'd like to, there's some redevelopment issues that we have to file on, and some numbers that we're currently running for negotiations in the budget process. So as soon as we move forward with those, we will be working with Public Works and Engineering to get those numbers to you.
All right, and if anything else comes up, I'll be in contact with both of you. Okay, mm-hmm. Thank you. The last item I have is, since Councilman Rapata is not here, I'd like to ask the city attorney and the city manager about the request of and procedure we have to follow as far as putting a citizen to represent the city in certain issues that we have, and I'm talking about, and what do we have to do? Can I refer the name, or shall I hold off on that?
I'm not sure I follow you.
Hey, are you wanting to know what the process is to replace
exactly
the new council person?
No. Somebody. Well, can I just start from the beginning? Mm-hmm. I was trying to hold up on the name.
Speak into that microphone.
I think I understand what your question is.
If the city decides to appoint a citizen. Right. Represent the city in certain projects that we have going, what is the process that we have to follow to appoint that individual?
I'd want to look at the agreement, the joint powers agreement, I think that you're referring to. To look at the terms, I apologize. I don't remember off the top of my head if that requires that the okay. appointee be a sitting member of the council or not. Okay. But I'd be happy to look at that and
I think the city manager can probably give you a little more information as to what I
understand.
Be brought back to the council for discussion.
Very well.
That's it.
Councilman Chavez?
Nothing to Chavez.
I have a thank you note from Karen Powell. As many of you know, David Powell, her husband, was our former fire chief, and he passed away a few months ago. And she just sent us a note to say thank you so much for your donation to the Reedley College Foundation in the name of David Powell. And we had donated some money in his name. I attended a COG meeting. I need to apologize. I did not have time to prepare my report for that, so I will have that ready for our next council meeting. But I did have a question and maybe a clarification, and this is directed to our city attorney for this evening. Could you share with me the process of replacing the vacated position for Area 3?
Yes. Under the government code, the council will have 30 days from the time that you accept the resignation within which to make an appointment of someone that is qualified to represent that district. In other words, someone who is a registered voter within within that district. And they would, that person would be appointed to fill out the remainder of the term, which runs through next year, through the election of November 2012. If the council does not make that appointment within that 30-day period, then under the law, it must go to an election at some point. The law is not specific about when that election would have to occur, so we can do some more work on that and see if we can glean anything further. As Councilman Rapata said, the statutes are not always crystal clear. So, but that in general, that's the 30-day window that you would have, and okay. We can bring, if you would like, some more information back at your next council meeting on that.
Mm-hmm. If I could I ask one question?
Sure.
Finance Director, could I ask a question? If we do a special election, What kind of funding are we looking at?
A special election, we were estimating about $13,000 to $15,000. If you tag it on to a general election, it's probably going to be about half of that.
Okay. Thank you.
I would ask that we come back sooner than the next council meeting, because that is going to cut into half of the time that we have. So if we could get some information to make a decision sooner than that, I'd appreciate it.
Certainly.
And if someone is interested, Ray, who should they contact if someone lives in District 3 and is interested in being on our council? What would be the process?
I think at this time, it probably would be best to call the city manager's office and take their request and get out the appropriate information to them.
Paper to do that, too, also.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we could. After we get a little more information, we'll be able to move ahead a little more.
Okay. Good. So we have a lot of people here this evening. Put the word out, okay? Our website shows the districts and shows the area that the person would need to live in, and we're looking for one of you to help us. Question. George, you had a question?
I was just going to ask you to give us the rough boundaries of that district so some of these folks may know of folks over there to encourage. What are the rough? Anybody know those?
I don't. Springfield, Button Willow, Parlier, and Pecan, I think.
Yeah. It's over like Save Mart and that way north.
Springfield is where the community center is.
Mm-hmm. High school.
If you know someone in that area, folks, go out and solicit.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Okay.
We can get maps for anybody who wishes to look at the district, and if they'll come by City Hall, we'll make some available.
Okay. Okay, so there'll be maps available at City Hall if you don't have access to the internet to get that information. That's all for the council reports. Staff reports?
I have nothing.
Any other staff?